We've been your job search besties and helped you in some way. There's a cool way you can support the show. Shout us a virtual coffee.
We get a huge kick out of reading all of your success stories. Head to buymeacoffee.com/interviewboss and shout us a cuppa.
If you keep us caffeinated, we can keep the content coming.
I think real security and the real safety net is yourself. It's your skills, your network, your career story. That's your real safety net.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Interview Boss. My name is Emma. I'm a radio journalist who's teamed up with my sister to give you advice, inspiration, and support when you're looking for a new job. Sarah is a HR and recruitment professional, and together we're excited to give you all the tips, tricks, and behind the scenes knowledge to help you in your career.
Hey, Em, and welcome back, wonderful listeners, whether it's your first or it's your 1,000th episode. It is time for our favorite part of the podcast, the Shoot Your Shot shout out. This is where we celebrate you guys, our incredible listeners all around the world. You've gone out there, you've used our advice, you've shot your shot, and you've come back to tell us about it. Em, this week, our shout out goes to Regina, who bought us 3 coffees. Thank you, Regina.
She said, I just wanted to say a big thank you for your podcast. I've been listening for weeks in the run-up to my diagnostic radiographer interview on Friday, the 12th of September, both at home and on my drives to work, and it's made such a difference. I particularly like the way you break things down into the best bits. As a middle-aged woman with a lot of work experience, I found your guidance on structuring Tell Me About Yourself so helpful. The episode about what to do when your mind goes blank was a lifesaver for me, as I can be a nervous interviewee. What I value most is that your advice always feels practical and natural, not overly scripted. Even if I get a little derailed, I can always find my way back, and that gave me real confidence going into the interview. So thank you so much for the work you put into this. You've helped me more than you know. By the way, I got the job. That's the best bit. Warm regards, Regina. She buried the lead.
She just left.
You almost didn't tell us that you got the job. That is so exciting.
Also, fun fact for everyone listening, that just reminded me of something. How do you think, people out there, that you spell lead when you say bury the lead? M, reveal.
It is L-E-D-E, not L-E-A-D,
I had no idea. I am such a spelling and grammar person.
Whiz.
I just have a bit of a knack for it. And I had no idea that that's how you spelt that. And then since you told me that, I've seen it a few places now. So like I keep noticing it everywhere. So maybe you can share that as a fun fact.
Because weren't you editing something of mine? I was like, can you look over this? And I had like suggested leads and you were like, that's not how that's spelt. And it was so satisfying getting to clap back because big sister energy always telling me how I'm wrong. And I was like, actually, you're wrong. You don't know what you don't even know.
Well, where does it come from? Do you know the origin of it? Like, why is it spelt like that?
No, but I feel like I remember being taught it in like journalism 101. Literally, that's the first ever class I had. And it was like writing leads. And it was like, it's spelt this way. Make sure you remember that.
I just looked it up. Live research here. The Oxford English Dictionary suggests this arose as an intentional misspelling of lead in order to distinguish the word's use in the instructions to the printers versus the printable text. So they would do H-E-D for headline and D-E-K for deck so that they knew that's not the beginning of the story, that's the instruction or something. Interesting. Maybe there's another story for it, but yeah, fun fact.
Also, shout out to you, Regina, for being a radiographer. Our sister Annie is also a radiographer and sonographer, and we salute you. Extremely smart cookies. Clever chook. Very smart.
You just know so much about the body and where all the bits are. Like, it just, I would have no idea.
If you're anything like our sister, you are like the resident medical person in the family. Even though you're not a doctor, you obviously get exposed to a lot of different other health professionals, specialists. So we just ask our sister anything medical and she always has an answer.
She has good health literacy. We've got a lot of good health literacy in our family, actually. It's very handy. Now, We have gone off on a tangent because it's going to be one of those episodes. Emma and I always do. If you want results like Regina, and maybe you need a little bit more help, maybe you didn't have as much of a big light bulb moment hearing about Best Bits. Maybe you've just been left with questions. How do I do that? How am I going to come up with them? Is this a good story? How do I tell that story? Am I saying it right? All these things. Maybe you need a little bit more help than what you can get from a podcast. Maybe you need something a little bit more personalized. You can check out Interview Academy. That is step by step by step going to break it down with activities, interactive things, workbooks. I really break down each little bit of understanding that you have to have in order to build a really great answer and to do well in the interview. Or maybe you want some one-on-one help. I meet with people all around the world. You can check out what times are available and book in and see if it suits you. interviewboss.com.au/coaching.
If you liked one of our episodes, want to share a shoot your shot with us, kindly follow us on Instagram and slide into our DMs. You can also request an episode specifically on your conundrum, which is exactly what Lizzie did this week, and we're dedicating a whole episode to her. She said, "Hey, I'm a listener from the UK and have been in the job market for 6 months. I became unemployed unexpectedly. I'm currently at a final stage with two roles, which are very different. One is a permanent role for a luxury brand, but the pay isn't ideal. They gave me their top figure, which is the minimum that I can accept. However, I'm unemployed, so I can't really be picky, and the company reviews are negative from ex-employees. The second is a new company. It's a startup of about 3 years. It's a contract role for an initial 6 months, but it's 60K more on pro rata. Having been unemployed for 6 months, the salary is very important because I've got debts and I've had to move house, rehome pets during this time. But the company reviews seem like a red flag, but a contract role isn't as job secure. Oh, any advice? I feel like if I was in a job already, I would take the higher salary job, but should I be prioritizing a permanent role that's lower salary, although has potentially bad reviews?" Oh, Lizzie is crashing out and I can feel it from here. That is so stressful. And the part about if you were already in a job, like things would be so different. You would just go for the money. You'd feel a lot more secure. But when life has been so stressful because you've been unemployed, it's actually not just about what job sounds like you would enjoy it more. There's more at stake.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's just so much to think about when we're comparing things. And I wanted to do this episode about Lizzie's scenario, but also to make sure that we break everything down so that it's relevant for you if you're listening to this and you've got some other kind of dilemma that you need to break down. Maybe there's two different jobs and they're different in location, or it's the pay, or like there's all this, there's always going to be a different combination of these different factors. How do we break it down and how do we kind of think about it? And we'll give you not necessarily an answer of what you should do. I don't think that's what strangers on the internet should be doing for other people around the world. But maybe we can give you some great stuff to think about to lead you to your own best conclusion. So I think it's a pretty common dilemma to go permanent versus contract. I think a lot of people struggle with that because it's the security versus like, oh, but this contract one could be a permanent opportunity. And that happens a lot, right? But also there's plenty of times where a contract does just actually finish and the person comes back from their leave or whatever and you have to move on. And we've got higher pay, we've got better reviews. It's all pros and cons.
I tend to think, though, with contracts, yes, sometimes it does end and that's it and you've got to find something else. But the thing is, you know it's coming. So there is an element of preparation. It's not like you're being unemployed again. You could start that job and kind of not be in a scarcity mindset, but be saving, be ferrying money away, be knowing that this is coming up, start applying, you know, really early compared to what you normally would. I think you do have a greater element of control over navigating the contract running out.
Yeah. And you can start looking 3 months out from the contract finishing, like for your next role, like to move into the next thing. Yeah. The thing that I wanted to start with, though, is a little teeny weeny reality check. And this is something that often comes up when people write to us like, "Help, I'm in this situation." And the thing is that, yes, you're at the final stages, but you're not in any situation yet. There are no offers. So I get that obviously you're thinking, oh, well, when I do get offered it, like I'm going to have to decide really quickly. Sure, but you've always got a day, 2 days. Like, you can always ask for a couple of days to think about the offer. That's not going to change things. If you've been offered the role, you have time. It's not going to have to be like a quick, you know, spur of the moment decision. You've got some time to think about it once you actually have the offer. And look, I'm not saying don't think about it beforehand. I just want to throw a little bit of water on the fire a little bit to say that there is no decision yet. We're just thinking ahead about what we would do in a hypothetical scenario that we're offered both of these roles. Because what if you're only offered one and you don't get offered the other one? Well, then there's no decision. Then are you going to take the role or not take the role? Like, that's the only decision. And then in that case, it sounds like Lizzie would just take whatever role it is that she's offered, right? And just deal with the associated consequences. Something could happen in both processes that means that there is no decision to make, that maybe one of them goes on hold and then you didn't get the other one. So you're still in the running for that one, but it's kind of on hold and you haven't heard anything. Does that make sense? Or you do get offered two, which is actually kind of a great situation to be in because you can then leverage one of them against the other one.
What a great reframe. I think that, like, reading Lizzie's message, it's kind of giving dread, panic, you know, just a bad sense of
just confusion, of, stuck. I'm stuck.
Yeah, that's the energy it's giving. But after being unemployed for this long, having all of that stress that you've gone through in your personal life, what a powerful position to be in, to have two offers that you can do power moves against each other, that you can really sit with it and weigh up what one's going to be best for you in your lifestyle instead of just having to accept the first thing that comes your way out of scarcity. That is such a good reframe.
And also, if you have two offers, go listen to our Power Move episode. We will try and link it below for you. But it's about having two offers and how you, or having one offer but still in the running for another one, how you use that offer to get the second offer to say, hey, I've been offered another job. You're going to have to let me know so that you don't have to kind of make that weird choice. Or you can use it to say, I've been offered this much money. I know that you said that this is your max, but I just wanted to check, is there any room for extra benefits or a parking spot or a whatever? And like vice versa with the contract role, you can say to them, if you wanted to take the contract role, but the other one, you know, you'd been offered that one as well. You could say to the contract role, can I understand a little bit about what the process is for making a contract role permanent, or why this role is a contract or something like that, because I have actually been offered a permanent role and I'm really interested in this one, but I'm just a little bit concerned about the job security. And I was hoping you could talk to me a little bit more about what that's like, or how much notice I would have before it was going to finish, or do they normally get extended? What happened to the last person? Like, all these things that you can ask with way more confidence having another offer, saying, I've been offered another permanent role. Could you make it a 7-month contract? Like, whatever. You can suddenly be asking for some things and just seeing, because you've got two offers.
I've just had a thought and I have to write it down or I'm going to forget. Hang on.
Pause for Emma's unrelated thought.
Great. I've captured the thought.
Okay. Did you write that on your hand?
Yeah. I don't have any paper.
What? That is such a mum thing. I haven't seen anyone write a note on their hand in like 10 years.
What do you mean?
How do you not have paper, an envelope, a letter,
a book?
I don't
have anything around at the moment.
Oh my goodness. That's bizarre.
Do you really never do this? I do this like probably once a week.
Leave us a comment on Spotify or send us a DM or an email or carrier pigeon if you write notes to yourself on your hand.
In a pinch, okay?
I like, get your phone. I don't know. Like, just, you're in front of a computer. I'm just so shocked.
I don't know. You're making me feel weird. It's a normal thing, okay?
I don't know.
I thought you were going to get up me and say that it's bad for your health, like ink in your skin or something.
Oh, no, it's not.
Okay, anyway, let's talk about security and reframe that, because I think security can be a bit of a false trap.
Yep. And I think that sounds like it's something that's really weighing on Lizzie. Like, she's considering taking quite a lot less money with a company with bad reviews just because of security. And if that's like the main thing going for this company and this role, I want to really unpack it a little bit. Now, I want to do a little thought experiment for Lizzie and for anyone listening to this. Imagine that both roles ended in 6 months. let's say the permanent one, like there was a restructure or something like that. Like you just knew in advance for whatever reason that they were both going to end in 6 months. And maybe in this scenario, they were paid the same as well. Which one would make you more employable at the end of that 6 months? Which one would you be glad that you did for that 6 months?
Yeah. Putting them on the even playing field.
We're going like, is that 6 months really valuable in that contract role? Or is it like, oh, it's kind of an easy, boring role that I've done before and it's like not going to give me that much, just more pay. Does that make sense? Or is it like the job security one would also give me a lot of experience too? So even that would be valuable, even if it was only for a short time. Like, I really think that that kind of changes things. Which one makes you more employable? I think real security and the real safety net is yourself. It's your skills, your network, your career story. That's your real safety net. Is, we've done an episode on this before, the difference between job security and career security. You can't control what's going to happen in that permanent role. Like, just because, yes, it is permanent, it might be more insecure than the contract role. Like, they might be going through financial struggles and there's a restructure around the corner and it's going to be, you don't even qualify for redundancy payments because you weren't even working there for 12 months. Like, it could be even worse and it could come out of the blue. Like you said, the contract one, at least you know, 6 months I'm counting down. Like, you've got all that notice. You wouldn't get 6 months worth of notice with a redundancy or a layoff, as Lizzie unfortunately knows.
Investing in yourself is the greatest insurance you could ever take out.
Yes. Yes, I think so. We're looking for transferable skills, solid interview stories. Which one's going to give you a better reference and network? Like, which one's going to give you more contacts or a better team or opportunity to go to some events and things that you might actually meet other people and get more involved in the industry? All of those other things, I think, are something worth thinking about instead of just permanent job equals security.
And no one can answer this but you, because you know about the company. Like, maybe the luxury brand is really bougie and has heaps of networking type cool events to go to. But then again, maybe the luxury brand, I'm just making this up, but maybe that's really niche and you won't ever be able to get another job in like a luxury brand. And actually the startup that's in a more like basic field would give you greater, wider skills. So there's so many variables.
Also, just a very, very small note. I don't know whether like these things translate globally. I'm not sure where Lizzie's based, but I have heard a lot of bad cultural things about luxury brands, unfortunately, and just what it's like to work there. And the,
well, is that a surprise?
They're always, always hiring, in Australia at least, employee relations HR people. And what that means is there's a lot of shit to deal with. There's disputes, there's bullying claims, there's investigations, there's terminations, there's just stuff for heaps of employee relations experts to look at. And yeah, that is always a little bit of a red flag to me.
Interesting. So let's talk about a practical framework that you can use for making decisions. We're going to go through a few key pillars: money, growth, culture, and risk tolerance. So if anyone listening has a hard decision to make, you can ask yourself these questions and hopefully by the end, you've got a bit more clarity on what decision you might make. So let's chat about money first. Let's say you took the higher paying contract role. Could you live like you were on the other salary, save the entire rest during that contract, pay off your debts, build up your emergency funds, and get ahead?
Yeah, it's kind of a bit of a shortcut. And again, because we know that it's only a short-term role, you can kind of plan for some of that stuff. Whereas if you were going into a higher salary permanent role, maybe you wouldn't be so motivated to put money away. Does that kind of make sense? Like, because you're going, oh, well, I can always save next month. I can always save next month.
You're kind of working with the scarcity mindset. You're like,
yes,
all right, we don't know what's next. Let's get ahead.
We're here for a good time, not for a long time. We're putting away money. Hey, Interview Boss listeners, if the podcast just isn't doing it for you and you need way more help to prep for your next interview, we have the perfect thing for you. Interview Academy. Em, tell us all about it.
This is huge. This is the love child of Sarah after doing hundreds of one-on-one coaching sessions, finding out what people struggle with the most, common mistakes. Sarah has created the ultimate course that you can do in your own time, self-paced, heaps of modules, videos, interactive quizzes, a workbook that will become your Bible by the end that you can take with you into your interview. Because if you're a long-time listener, you know that we endorse taking notes into your interview. It's a game changer.
Check out more about it at interviewboss.com.au/interview academy.
And if you consider the contract role, factor in a gap. So if it took you 2 months after the end of the contract to find a new role, would the pay difference look as good? That's a good point.
Like if you stretch that 6 months worth of pay out over 8 months, because there's two at the end that you maybe, you know, have a gap, would that still be a better hourly rate or a better monthly salary? Like, think about it that way. I think that's a really helpful kind of thing to consider.
Because a lot of the time, the job search is unpredictable. And a big thing that we see a lot is someone might be finishing a contract or maybe they got laid off and they think, oh, I'm just going to take some time for me, chill out, reset. Maybe they got a bit of a redundancy payout. They're enjoying life. And then when they start to think, maybe I should start looking, it takes months and months. And then it's panic because, wow, I didn't factor this in, and it snowballs.
Assume that it's going to take you longer and then prepare for that scenario in advance so that you're not unpleasantly surprised.
And where do the two roles sit in terms of the roles that you have been applying for? So is the startup salary already way above the market, or is the permanent role way below?
Yeah, just in terms of how much they're paying. So I think this can be interesting information because it can kind of factor in a little bit to your decision or to your thought process. So let's say that the permanent role salary is kind of low for the market. Like everything else you've been applying for, you kind of said that that was your minimum you could accept. Everything else you've been applying for, roles that sound the same tend to pay higher. So they're actually paying a little bit below market. Obviously, that's not a great thing because you get paid below market, but that does kind of mean that you will have an opportunity to either make a case for a pay rise. Hey, look at all these other roles that pay this in the market. Look at what I'm doing, kind of thing. Does that kind of make sense? Like there's lots of evidence there for you to present, or at the very least, a good chance for you to, you know, hey, they haven't given me a pay rise. It's been a year. Well, they're the lowest payers. Pretty much any other job you get is going to pay you more. Does that kind of make sense? Like you're going to be able to earn more in the future, most likely, if you were going into a role that's under market. But if you're in a role that's above market, like the startup, let's say they're paying really, really high because they're going to need you to do some serious hours. And I don't know, they're trying to be really competitive to attract really good people because they know they can't give security or something like that. That can be really, really great, but it can be a little bit tricky if, let's say, you got permanency, you were there for a little bit longer, you lift your lifestyle and you get adjusted to that new pay rate. But then every other role like that in the whole rest of the market is going to pay lower. So you're kind of a little bit stuck there, or you have to get a big promotion for your next role. Does that kind of make sense? Like it can be a bit tricky to navigate longer term. So
yeah, your lifestyle creep has already snuck in. And then it's kind of, once you hit a certain salary, it's very hard to ever go backwards.
Yes. That's all I'm trying to say is think about your pay and your salary long term, and what's going to be best for you long term and how that kind of progresses, as opposed to just what am I going to be paid for the next 6 months.
Let's talk about growth now. We touched on this before, but some really good prompts you can ask yourself are, what role would give me more experience? What would give me more best bits and examples? And what would help me be more employable for the job after that? So thinking ahead, what would be the next step?
You could even go and have a look on LinkedIn at people who'd had that job before, like a few years before or like a while before. Where did they go afterwards? Which ones had better career pathways that you are also trying to kind of emulate? And I think this can be really helpful because sometimes the bad culture gives you lots of stories.
That's like, true.
You don't have to all be happy getting along and everything's amazing in the company for you to have good stories. like some of the most chaotic, ridiculous, nightmare, like basket case places have taught me the most, have been like game changers for my career growth because there's so much going on and it's chaos. You get story after story.
I forgot to tell you this. I'm going to live tell you a story that is unbelievable. So on the podcast before, I've told a story about my arch nemesis, my worst micromanager ever that I nearly quit, like traumatized. Maybe I'll link the episode and the minutes so that you can go back and listen. But basically, yeah, arch nemesis. It was in my first full-time job in my gap year. So I was very young, you know, big people pleaser, wasn't really going to stand up for her. She was the new office manager. She got hired and her first day was when the bosses had gone away on holiday. So she kind of came in like a hurricane, pissed everyone off, bullied everyone, was like so intense, spoke to people horribly, and everyone was like shocked. And we wanted to give her the benefit of the doubt. And it took a few days before like other people started talking to each other and being like, are you like struggling? Like this woman is evil.
Is it and, just me?
And at one point, my colleague came over to me, who was like my work mum, mind you, and just came over to me and grabbed me by the wrist and just gently squeezed it and then walked away as if a holy shit. Anyway, we were fighting for our lives and the boss emailed us and was like, hey, how's it all going with, let's call her Stacy. And so you can imagine my stress when we kind of share an email, like I'm worried about replying if she could possibly see it somehow. So I wanted to be honest, but I was so nervous to be like, SOS, she's evil, come back ASAP. So I said something very diplomatic, like, look, she has a bit of a different management style. We're kind of adjusting and getting to know how she operates. Like it was coded. It was Morse code for like SOS, get your ass back home. Anyway, the second that my bosses touched down, I think they had one day experiencing her and that was the end of that. She was let go promptly and left the building.
So you don't have to go back and listen to that episode because that was the story. Again.
That was it, yeah. Basically. Anyway.
Just retell the story. So what's the latest?
Wait, this is the first time in my life I started getting stress rashes. Like it was horrible. A couple of months later, she's gone. I go to visit Gramps, my grandfather. Guess who's moved next door to Gramps? This lady. I was horrified because I was like, oh my God, she's going to poison Gramps. Like, stay away from him. Like, and because he was elderly, she was going over there and like checking on him. And like, you know, she left her phone number on his fridge. And it was just so triggering because I was like, get this woman out of my life. Oh my God. Anyway, so that was funny. I used to bump into her now and then. And whenever I'd go and visit Gramps, I would like sprint down the driveway because it was a set of units and her lounge room faced the driveway. So you'd be trying to walk to visit Gramps and she's having a cup of tea and like flagging you down. Anyway, sadly, our Gramps passed away recently, which was very sad. So at his funeral, imagine my surprise when after the funeral, we follow the hearse out and we're doing that thing where everyone's coming up to you and hugging you and saying, so sorry for your loss. And it's like a very emotional time when she appears out of nowhere and taps me on the shoulder and says, hi, Emma. I'm not sure if you remember me, but, and I just went, oh, I remember you. Hello. How could I ever forget who you are? And I was like, wow, this is insane. You can't make this up. So I had to say hello, say, oh yeah, you were his neighbor, whatever. But yeah, I just thought it was hilarious that she said, I'm not sure if you remember me. Oh, I remember you. I still have nightmares about you.
I just love the contrast where like she's clearly like a good human in several ways, you know, but
I guess
not a manager.
Not in the workplace. No, not as an office manager.
Not as she's learnt some things maybe since then.
Oh gosh. Anyway, so small town things, hey?
Yep. Back to our hometown. Okay. So that brings us to the culture. We've just talked about growth. Now we're talking about culture. Now, we've got some episodes about reviews and things. We've got a whole one about what if the reviews are bad. Go and listen to that if you're worried about this or you've seen some bad reviews for a company that you're interviewing with or applying for. Bad reviews, obviously, it's not a good sign. Like, sure, it might be better if there were no bad reviews, but every workplace has people that left and don't like the way that things went. For example, the person you were just talking about might have had some bad things to say about the company. Maybe she left somewhere permanent to go there. They told me they wanted someone on and then they let me go and, you know, screwed me around and whatever. She could absolutely have some things to say about that process. Would that be correct from her experience? Sure. Would that be a true reflection of the whole workplace? Probably not, because people who are still working there typically don't go on and leave reviews because they're not looking at those sites.
It's always the disgruntled people that leave them. Like, if you leave on great terms and you loved your time there, but you're just onto the next mission, you're probably never going to think to leave a positive review.
Yeah. Have you left a review ever? For a company that you've worked at?
No, never.
I have, only because, like, we ran little campaigns internally to be like, can some people who currently work here please write some reviews, because we need to collect some. Like, we need to collect some people who actually have, like, normal things to say, because we'd had, like, you know, one or two people leave who wanted to go on and say something, go on a big rant. And you're like, there's just no other content there, so we need something else. So, yeah, I've gotten people to leave reviews and then left some myself that were genuine, but not unprompted have I ever gone and left a review. I would compare that stuff, though, with what do you notice during the process? Like, are they all talking about, oh, the executive don't let anyone make decisions? And then also in the interview, the person who was meeting with you said, oh, well, it has to go to the executive next. And, like, were there hints that, like, hey, that some of that stuff sounds true? Is it just a couple of reviews, or is it an actual pattern that you're noticing overall? Plus, were those people that left those reviews in a different team, in a different department, in a different country, in a different job? Like, you can have such different experiences from site to site if there's multiple locations, or from department to department, like different job types, because there might be one little mini negative culture in a certain area and then the rest of the company's like, oh, it's really not that bad over here.
Yes, take it with a grain of salt and think about your firsthand experience first.
And be warned by it genuinely, like if they are actually a pattern, but I don't want you to just judge by some person's individual words.
Next, onto risk tolerance. There's a few risky situations in Lizzie's kind of conundrum. So a good thing to think about is, which worst case scenario could you live with more easily?
Yeah, I thought this was a helpful kind of thing to think about. Like, which one, if you had to pick between these two awful outcomes, which would be...
Pick your poison.
Yeah, the least bad. Okay, so the first one is, the contract role doesn't get extended. It's 6 months and then it comes to an end. And you're back on the job market in 6 months' time, and it's going to take you a couple of months to get another job, right? That's worst case scenario number one. Worst case scenario number two, behind door number two. What's that from? Is that in Shrek 2 or something like that? Or is it in Shrek 1 where he's like choosing a princess? Behind door number two is this princess.
I don't remember. It's been a while between Shreks for me.
I think it is. I think something like that reminds me of Shrek. Behind door number two, the other worst case scenario is you take the permanent role and you hate it. It's a nightmare. The environment is toxic, that you've got a bad boss, the job's really boring, something, or all of them, and it makes you want to quit in 6 months' time. You've struggled to get to the 6 month point and you end up having to quit at that 6 months. Which would you rather live with?
I'm just curious. I know you don't have all the information, but what are you leaning to out of those two?
So much weight for me would come onto the personal stuff and like what I felt I was capable of.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like what I felt like I could tolerate. I would probably be leaning towards the contract role, but it would depend on like, am I the kind of person who is just going to, I've been in uncertainty for 6 months looking for a job and I get this job and I'm still in uncertainty from day one. Like if I just knew myself and knew that there would be no relaxing and I was just going to still be in a constant state of stress being in that role, then I think I would go for the other role.
That's so true. It really does come down to what you're predisposed to, your mindset.
But also, like, if the risk of being in a bad environment, maybe you're the kind of person that's like, no, that's fine. Like, I've been in shitty environments before and I just do my job and I don't let other people bother me. Like, if that's something that's easy for you to tolerate, but the uncertainty isn't, as long as you've got the good paycheck and you're all set and stable and you could finally just like, does that make sense? Like, switch off your brain a little bit. Like, you don't have to worry. You just come in and you do your job and everything else is going to fade into obscurity. Who cares about someone bitching at someone or someone emailing you nasty because at least you've got a job? Like, does that kind of make sense? Like, if that's going to give you a lot of peace to deal with that stuff, then maybe that's the one that you need to go with.
Yeah.
You've got to know yourself. What would you do?
Oh, I'm thinking higher money, shorter time. I would embrace the control that comes with that, that I know it's coming. I'd be really disciplined. I would have the mentality of like, I'm going to squeeze as much out of this job as I can, like take on everything, be crazy for 6 months so that I can get all the examples and opportunities and network. And yeah, but that's because of the situation I'm in. I'm young. I don't care about contract. Like I know that opportunities come. I'm obviously not in the position she was in with. I think there's a lot to be said for how much a scarcity mindset like that stays with you and alters your brain. You hear people say that, you know, they grew up financially struggling and still to this day, they overbuy groceries because the thought of their kids thinking there's no food in the house kills them. Like this stuff is really hard to reverse. So there's a lot of nuance that is needed.
Totally. And also your safety net and your security and like, what would you do next? And maybe she's had to move home during this whole process. And actually now that means she does have a little bit more security to take the contract role. I don't know. To take it away, to finish it up, to roll it all together. There's no single right choice really with these decisions. And also I know that people don't really want us to tell them you should do this. Like imagine if I just replied, take the contract and just no other context, like just tell her what to do. I know people aren't looking for me to tell you what to do, but you are really the only person that can make up your mind. All we can kind of offer is things to think about or things to consider. And the last little bit is, as a reminder, don't get ahead of yourself. Wait until you actually have to make the decision to make the decision.
Yeah, you can get so sucked into the vortex, going down the rabbit hole, twisting yourself in knots, and it may not even become reality. So wait until it is reality. And until then, we are choosing peace.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you could get so much more information. Hey, we'd like to offer you the role and just to update you, the boss has actually left. Oh, okay. Well, that changes things. Like, oh, and you're offered the other role too. Okay, great. Now you can think about it, but you've got some more information now and they've offered you this salary and the startup actually didn't offer you the salary you were expecting. It's a bit lower and like, you know, things are going to be different when you have more information at that point. But I would love to hear an update from Lizzie. I hope she gets back to us about what happened and how it all went. I don't know if we made it quite in time. That's the one thing about sending us a message. If you're looking for a personal response really, really fast, we can't always get to everyone really quickly. So sorry about that in advance, but we will update you if we hear from Lizzie.
Go get them.
Thanks so much for listening to Interview Boss. If you like listening to the sound of our voices, follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you might be listening to this. Or better yet, tell someone else about the show. Send them this episode or one of our other episodes that you think might be helpful to them. That's how we can hit the charts and help more people all around the world. For more advice, inspiration, and a supportive community, chuck us a follow on Instagram or come follow me on LinkedIn. Can you believe we started Interview Boss in 2021?
Not really. It's insane. That's a lot of episodes and a lot of hours of talking.
Oh my gosh, it is. And if you're scrolling through all of our episodes, you might scroll straight past something that you really, really needed.
Yes, we're always getting messages from people asking us to do an episode on something. And I'm like, we already have.
So we've put together playlists to help you find the episodes that are exactly what you need, suited to your situation.
They're all categorized. If you're applying for jobs, we have episodes about resumes, cover letters, job ads. If you've been offered your dream job, we have episodes on resigning, exit interviews, and how to impress at your new company.
And we even have a very special playlist that's very popular for if you have an interview coming up immediately and you need just our most recommended hard-hitting episodes between now and then.
For all our last-minute listeners. It's all there for you. You can browse by category and check out all the playlists at interviewboss.com.au/podcast.